Good afternoon. Welcome. And my name is Karen Meacham. I'm here at CSIS and with the Global Health Policy Center. But thank you for taking time out of your busy day to come listen and take part in a discussion with our guest, Murta Collard, the country director and head of the UN World Food Program's operations in Haiti. It's certainly been a tumultuous year in Haiti between food scarcity, food riots, natural disasters, and now the economic downturn. But I guess the good part, this past week in Washington has been an eventful time and offers some hope, I think, with Haitian leaders, international donors, and other interested parties in town to gather to discuss the island and looking forward, I hope. Murta Collard is again, the country director and head of the World Food Program in Haiti. She arrived in Haiti in August 2008, last year, to deal with the aftermath of Hurricanes Gustave, Hannah, and Ike and the continuing conditions there. She's been with the WFP for 16 years, I think. Brings tremendous experience from being the country director in the Ivory Coast, in Cuba, and has also served in assignments in Iraq, Kosovo, and Rwanda. Especially during that crisis time there, which, again, I think offers some interesting experience. Ms. Collard holds a degree in political science from the University of Bologna. She has a diploma from Johns Hopkins School of Advanced and International Studies and has a master's in international relations from the International University of Japan, which I also find fascinating. I think Murta will speak for 15, 20 minutes, and then hopefully we can open it up for discussion and have a bit of a round table. So thank you.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much for your attention to Haiti. I've been just 8 months in Haiti, but I find it a fascinating place, so I'm very happy for the recent events around Haiti and the gathering interest. So I also welcome the opportunity to speak to you and try and maintain and even stimulate further that interest. So I thought I would bring up for you, I don't know how familiar you are, certainly some of you are very familiar with Haiti, what the WFP has done in Haiti in the recent months. We have had a formulation mission to visit the field, speak with key counterparts, key observers, and provide us advice on what we should do in 2010 and 2011. And I thought it would be interesting to present a bit of the information they have used to provide their recommendations. At the same time, the World Food Program also did a survey, a food security survey in rural areas in Haiti in 2007, and then a similar survey but in urban areas in 2009 in July to look at the impact of high food prices on households. So I'd like to give you an overview of key indicators that can explain what the situation looks like and what the challenges are, and then continue with what the World Food Program is doing and what we see the situation and the hopes and opportunities for the coming years. So in terms of data, interesting data are, well, the total population is around 9 million people. Of these, 60% live in rural areas and 40% in urban areas. Of the 60% in rural areas, one-fourth is considered food insecure. Food insecure means less than 1,900 kilocalories per person per day. The international threshold set for a human being to live and have an active life, a healthy active life, is 2,100. So it is 200 kilocalories below that level. In urban areas, it is one-third of the population that is food insecure. The urban population, 50% of it lives in slums, and 25% of the population in urban areas it lives in the capital, Port-au-Prince. In the rural population, which accounts, as I said, for 60% of the total population, on average can produce food for its own consumption for 6 to 8 months. and for the rest it has to get it from the market. This is also what explains the high dependency of the country on food imports. In the harvest in autumn 2008 was 20% below average. The harvest now in March was good, but still, if we compare 2007 with 2008, we see that food production went down from 48% to 42% of total needs for the population, and food imports went up from 47% to 52%, and aid went up from 5 to 6% between 2007 and 2008. So you see the challenge in terms of the country being able to feed its own population. The country is also under a very, very strong population pressure. The official figure is an average family size of 5. The reality is that I try to speak to our beneficiaries at least once a week, and I have never come across a woman that says she has had less than 5 children. And meeting women that have 8 children or 12 children is very common. And they are all very young because when they finish school, they start having babies. And they start. It's not uncommon for a woman to start having babies at age 16. Normally they have babies at age 20, and they are one baby after the other. So the population pressure is very strong, and it's part of the food security issue because this demographic explosion over the last 20 years have, of course, offset the balance between local agricultural production and local demand for food. Now, the prices, food prices, imported food prices have gone up enormously in March, April 2008. They have stayed very high, and they have gone even higher in September after the hurricanes and after a subsidy on rice was lifted in August. Then from September onwards, they have started reducing. The reduction has been much slower than the one experienced in international markets. Prices are still higher than the last 5 years average, and upcountry they are still higher than in the capital and in major urban areas. Now, 70% of the population has no access to basic health services, no access to sanitary facilities, and 50% of the population has no access to potable water. One-fourth of children under 5 is chronically malnourished, and 9% are acutely malnourished. These are average rates, so the rates in mountainous areas are higher. Still on nutritional indicators, micronutrient deficiencies, which affect the growth of a child and can lead to permanent damages to the person and certainly limit growth. 60% of children under 5 suffer from anemia. 50% of women suffer from anemia. One-third of children under 5 are vitamin A deficient, and 60% of children between 6 and 12 years are iodine deficient. There are 400,000 children in aged 6 to 12 that are out of school. This is one-third of children in school age. Remittances. Now that prices are going down, we are worrying about remittances and what can happen, the impact of the international financial crisis on Haiti. There was an Inter-American Development Bank study conducted in 2007 that indicated that that 31% of Haitian adults receive remittances. And remittances, 71% of the remittances come from the U.S., and the average amount is $1,500 per year in various installments. 77% of these remittances are used for food, housing, and clothing. The remainder is used for education, to start a business, or for savings. And starting January 2009, remittances have decreased by something between 2.8% and 10%. It depends on the source. What is first being affected is the use of remittances for business and savings, but if the trend continues, it will gradually go into basic services. From interviews that we are having with we are visiting now hospitals, health centers, and try and monitor even more closely health-related facility and talking to people that go there and people who work there. And there is reportedly an increase, again, in the number of malnourished children. So even children that are brought to the hospital or health center to cure other diseases, medical staff say that they are malnourished. And talking to people, what they say is that it's the economic situation. Things are not improving. Things are getting more and more difficult. The examples they give is that many are street sellers, and they cannot sell as much as they were selling before. Many were receiving support from others, and now they are not receiving that support anymore. And this is a very particular trend that is coming up, that actually families that have remittances or that are better off help other families who do not have remittances. And so that could be an indirect impact. Yet the situation is not really as marked, so we have no scientific evidence that can allow us to estimate what is the impact really of a decrease in remittances compared to prices still being somewhat higher than the five-year average or people not having recovered yet completely from natural disasters. But we have this clear indication that economic conditions are getting tougher for the Haitian people. The government has presented a plan at the donor conference 2 days ago that focuses a lot on job creation, especially through the manufacturing industry and the manufacturing of textile products for export to the United States, where they can benefit of the HOPE 2 Act, which gives preferential treatment to Haitian textile manufacturers into the American market. Creating jobs is certainly a key thing to do. Haitians are extremely hard workers, but they need to be given a job. And there are an enormous amount of able-bodied adults that cannot work, and it's causing also important social stress. The objective would be to create 150,000 jobs over the coming 2 to 3 years. The plan also focuses on relaunching local agriculture and addressing environmental issues. And while we think that this certainly makes a lot of sense, and we are committed as WFP to try and procure locally from small farmers as much as possible so that we can use our purchasing power to support economic growth. On the other hand, we would like the following data to be considered, because the topography of Haiti is very peculiar. 51% of the country has slopes above a 40% gradient, which means that they are really very, very steep. And 20% of the country has a slope that is above a 60% gradient. Now, 90% is a wall, so 60% is very steep. And most developed countries in the world that have such steep mountains, they protect these mountains. These are areas that are destined for forests and nothing else. And we all have policies and schemes to protect the forests. Because of the combination of population pressure and food insecurity, poor people in remote mountainous areas have started to chop the trees and cultivate in order to grow what they need to eat. And at the same time, they also use the wood to sell it as charcoal, because this is the key. Remember that I told you they can grow only what is sufficient to cover food needs for 6 to 8 months. So selling wood that can be used as charcoal is, of course, another very important source of income. Now, protecting the environment and having schemes for replanting forests necessarily needs schemes that support these people in finding alternative ways to make a living. Otherwise, we can continue with what we have done until now, planting and replanting and replanting, so that people can keep on chopping wood and selling charcoal. Professor Paul Collier, who is the economic advisor for the UN Secretary General on Haiti, has suggested subsidizing the use of gas. Again, this is possible and maybe more easy in urban areas than in rural areas. But again, what needs to be considered is the fate of all those that work and that live off the charcoal production and trade. The topography is combined with a very difficult climatic situation as well. Hurricanes go they like Haiti particularly. They can skip the Dominican Republic, but the part Haiti and the eastern part of Cuba are the areas in the world that are amongst the most exposed to hurricanes. And the combination of depleted environment and hurricanes is just a terrible vicious cycle, because the heavy rains that come down are not stopped by the trees, so they wash down the land. The land is impoverished, so agricultural productivity goes even... there is a loss in productivity on average of 1.2% every year. Plus the water goes away, doesn't go underground, and so the island is going dry. Paradoxically, so we have these heavy storms, heavy natural disasters, and then the country is drying up. So, and this is another challenge for agriculture. So plus there are important issues on land tenure that do not offer any incentive to improve productivity. So supporting the development of local agriculture is a very challenging issue. It's certainly something that has to be pursued, but it cannot be the only solution to Haiti's problems. So this is why we see it important to have it combined with a scheme that is focused on creating employment in industry. The biggest concern that we have, given the social indicators that I mentioned before, is that if we create jobs, but in order to be competitive, the salaries have to be necessarily very low, what will the people do? Because they will work, but they will not necessarily see an immediate improvement in their economic conditions. So what we are strongly advocating for is also to have a strong engagement in public policies, and to look again at the whole safety nets issues. 50% of the Haitian population lives with less than $1 per person per day, and 75% of the Haitian population lives with less than $2 per person per day. Yet, every single Haitian has to pay for healthcare, every mother has to pay to give birth, and every child has to pay to go to school. So with the income that many households have, of course, medical care is a luxury that they give up. And on the one hand, this is a strong cause of unhappiness and of social tensions. And on the other hand, it is also jeopardizing the country's human capital and the country's future. We see public policies and safety nets as a way also to create employment. And it is also a way for the country to have a network that helps the population address crisis situations. In November, when children started to die in high numbers because of acute malnutrition, these were chronically malnourished children who received even less to eat because their parents couldn't go to the markets because the roads had been cut off by the hurricanes, we had to use helicopters. We had to spend $6 million that we received through generous contribution from the international community to bring food and to evacuate children. We saved nearly 50 children, but had there been a system of community health workers, we could have been informed much earlier, and maybe the community itself would have known already how to react without having the need for this whole major logistics exercise to occur. So what we it's like the school feeding. We are assisting 500,000 children in through school feeding, and the schools are helping us in having a network through which we can reach the communities also for other purposes. So this is why we are strongly advocating for, and we are working with the Ministry of Health, with the Ministry of Education, and also the Ministry of Agriculture to have a better outreach in terms of basic social services towards the population. There is a figure of the community health worker, which is a figure that existed under the Duvalier dictatorship. And when the dictatorship was abolished, everything that was going with the dictatorship, of course, was also abolished. And then in the difficult 20 years since, nothing has been reintroduced to... NGOs have. There are a number of NGOs who work in nutrition and health that have reintroduced the figure of the community health worker. But the efforts of the NGOs are concentrated in several areas. There is not a uniform coverage. So also what the authorities are asking for, and I think the issue was raised also the day before yesterday in one of the afternoon sessions at the donor conference, is a whole issue of donor coordination and NGO coordination. And what the authorities are asking is, they certainly welcome the action by the NGOs and by the international communities, but they would like to be supported in having the coordinating, the guidance, the standardization role that an authority should perform in a country. WFP is present in Haiti doing, on the one hand, food for work projects, and we try to combine the food as much as possible also with cash, because people need food, but people also need cash to cover other needs. And the work consists mainly in watershed management, rehabilitation of rural roads, irrigation canals, and cleaning up of the town of Gonaï, for instance. We do school feeding, as I said, 500,000 people, and we do mother and child healthcare projects. And we assist those that are socioeconomically vulnerable and are in the town of Gonaïve and other areas affected by the hurricanes and who have not yet fully recovered from the damages that they have suffered. We work with NGOs to do so, and we have ourselves been severely underfunded in 2006 and 2007, which has debilitated us enormously, especially in our coordination capacity and in our analysis capacity. So it is only in 2008 that we could reestablish a capacity in terms of food security analysis to work with the national body within the Ministry of Agriculture that focuses on food security, who need themselves to be supported, because they now react to whoever is commissioning them a study, and they conduct the study, but they need to be supported now in developing their own strategy, their own work plan, and their own priorities so that they can really serve as an appropriate advisory body for policymakers. It has debilitated us in our capacity to coordinate with NGOs. So with the emergency, we got important funding, and we had a key role, especially in the coordination of logistics and in the provision of logistics services to the international community. When we delivered humanitarian assistance, we made sure not to deliver just food, but also water and sanitation packages, for instance. And we, starting with next week, we are going to have again one of our best experts in this type of fields to do lessons learned with the international and local NGOs and to start preparedness for the forthcoming hurricane season. We want to do much more coordination also in with the NGOs in the area of food security. Food security can be addressed in various ways. It does not always need food. It can be done through agricultural projects or through health services. We don't need to focus only on the supply part of food security, but on the access and on the consumption side. And from the reactions we have had from the NGO community, they are actually welcoming that there is now finally a presence again that can support the authorities in having this coordination role. Capacity development is our goal. It's a long-term goal. It cannot be achieved quickly, but capacity development at community level is something particularly necessary, and this is another area in which we look forward to strengthened cooperation with the NGO community. Community participation, communities' determination of priorities is absolutely important. And capacity development, of course, of the authorities in what we see our area, which is disaster preparedness, school feeding, nutrition, are fundamental. This is more or less what I had to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that detailed and revealing and I guess maybe sobering overview. Thank you. I have several questions, but there are many of you that have spent time in Haiti and are experts in the room. Johanna Mendelson-Forman is here at CSIS, has done tremendous work in Haiti with food security, the former. Yeah, many people. I have one quick question I'd like to ask, and then I'd like to just open the floor for all of you. Please introduce yourself so we know who you are. But my quick question is just if we can take a few questions maybe, is just to give a quick recap of what happened at the donors conference, just to get your insight into some of the decisions and commitments that were made. Thank you. Okay. We can take a few maybe, Johanna. Go ahead.
Thank you, and I also wanted to recognize Ambassador Ernie Prieg, who's also an associate at CSIS and was our ambassador to Haiti several years ago, but still maintains an active role, so welcome. I just wanted to ask you, I mean, World Food Program has always been besieged by shortfalls of money, and I worked for MINUSTAH, in all honesty, so I know what's going on the ground. Why has World Food Program been so adamant about the food versus fuel issue in a country like Haiti, where it has, not been helpful in supporting some of the growth of renewable types of fuel, even like Jatropha in watersheds? And I wonder what it is. Is it a coordination problem within the UN system, or do you have particular updated information? I'd be very interested. I thought your report was just excellent, by the way. Very sad situation.
Hi, my name is Bob McGuire. I'm currently with the U.S. Institute of Peace. And I just wanted to mention a couple things. One is that the WFP website is an extremely good teaching tool at the university level, and I use it a lot with my students in my classes. So I just wanted to let you know that. A couple of things you mentioned I thought were really interesting. One is the fact that you try to procure food locally, and if you could maybe elaborate a little bit on that, because In the 1980s, when I was representing the Inter-American Foundation in Haiti, our country's strategy was to support food security. And what that basically boiled down to was providing farmers with greater control beyond the farm gate through helping them with food storage facilities so they wouldn't have to sell all their food at once and get extremely deflated prices and then have to buy expensive seed and food throughout the year leading up to the next harvest. These programs were very successful until they ran afoul of politics and marauding gangs would attack the silos and burn them and that sort of thing. I don't think we have that in Haiti anymore. But I'm wondering if food security could be improved in Haiti by assisting the conditions of small farm producers, greater access to credit, storage facilities, and other investments that would enable them to be able to spread out their food sales longer in the year and be able to store some seed and food for their own consumption throughout the year. And then the last thing I'd like to mention, I know that the government of Haiti is looking at the creation of a civic service program. There's a constitutional article that requires all Haitians to provide to do civic service. And one of the ideas they are currently looking at is to establish some kind of a civic service corps, which would essentially provide young people with opportunities to work in something similar to the Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps of the Work Progress Administration, this sort of thing. And I'm just wondering if you would see something like that as a positive development in terms of enhancing Haiti's ability to feed itself. And if so, you know, how might that look from your perspective of being on the ground over the past 8 months?
Let's start with those, I think.
Okay, thank you. Well, at the donor conference, it was a one-day conference. The morning saw absolutely high-level presence. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was there and had a brilliant, really brilliant speech. I think the most outstanding of all speeches made that day. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was there. World Bank's President Bob Zoellick was there. Strauss Kahn from IMF. The Prime Minister from Canada. The Insulza from the Organization of American States. It was really impressive to see how many high-level profiles were present, and certainly we all read it as a demonstration that there is a total commitment to support Haiti. The general reading is that security has been brought under control. The security issue is not anymore as dire as it was a few years ago. So this is certainly an achievement of the stabilization mission, and it is certainly the precondition for any economic growth and prosperity. You cannot do anything unless you have security. There have been very interesting exchanges and sessions, the session between the NGOs, Professor Paul Farmer, Dr. Paul Farmer, and Professor Paul Collier. I insisted only the final part of it, but those of you who were there can sure agree that it was a very interesting debate. It was looking at issues brought up in Professor Collier's report, and of course Dr. Paul Farmer is a very knowledgeable and prominent figure on Haiti. The in financial terms, in the morning session, also the Haitian Prime Minister gave a long and rather well-constructed speech that was aimed at reassuring the international community. The big debate that happened between the international community and the Haitian authorities during the preparation of the Washington meeting was the issue of governance. Donors really insisted and wanted to have a clear commitment by the nation authorities that governance would be there. And the basic example that has always been brought up is, yes, we can invest in road infrastructure, but this requires maintenance. And to ensure that maintenance of the governance issue has to be addressed. So there was a strong conditionality put on the table, and for many donors, that conditionality has not yet been met. The plan presented by the Haitian authorities is heavily focused on investment, so road infrastructure, electricity, textile industry, schools, hospitals. It has very, very little of what the government requires, actually. The Haitian authorities explain it by saying that, first of all, they need the infrastructure, they need also some concrete results.
One second on that. I don't understand why. I mean, and I just was looking at some data that the food imports from the Dominican Republic over the year have increased and continue to increase because of the shortages in Haiti. Why do you think, I mean, and aside from your driver's colloquial response, and you're an experienced food professional who's worked around the world, what do you see in Haiti that's different? I mean, it's something that I don't understand all these years. I'm sure a lot of people are, you know, my experience is mainly in the Americas, but I'd be interested for someone like yourself who's worked in other areas.
Every person I ask tells me 20 years ago we had this, 20 years ago we had that. It coincides with the end of the dictatorship. Poultry, porks, small cattle and so on, cheese. Everybody says 20 years we had this, 20 years ago we had this. So the key explanation that the key conclusion that I draw from this is that the insecurity, the instability, I mean, the Dominican Republic 30 years ago was worse off than Haiti. At a certain point, there was a political commitment to get the country out of the conditions it was in, and the decision was made to bet on tourism. Over the last 20 years, such a decision was not made. This commitment was not found in Haiti, and this is how, I mean, there is otherwise no other explanation. What was possible 20 years ago is certainly possible even now. Certainly there are issues to be addressed, but in order to address issues, what is required is a political commitment. So I think that is the thing. Shortages, WFP, yes, we are voluntarily funded, so we depend on contributions. 2006 and 2007 and also the first half of 2008 were bitter years for us. Luckily, then, we were much better funded. We have received a very generous contribution right in the last days from the United States that has come at a perfect timing because it's now the time we are running out of beans, of oil, and of blended flours, which is what we need in the nutritional programs. And it is right the time now in which we have to start pre-positioning our stocks. We have created strategic warehouses for the whole humanitarian community in four key towns, and we were really worried that we would not have the stocks. And we were very worried about it because what we are seeing this year is that the impact of the disasters of last year is still there. Many areas have not recovered, which means that they are far more vulnerable this year than what they were last year. Gonaïve gets flooded immediately, the smallest rain, and we have some parts of Gonaïve flooding. We have minor landslides, But because of the population density throughout the country, any landslide entails a loss of housing and a loss of livelihood. So there is a need this year to be able to intervene in many scattered small disasters. And to do this, we need to pre-position stocks with a large number of partners all over the country. And it's really thanks to this U.S. contribution that we will be able to do this. So it's so I'd like to emphasize again, because we have been emphasizing it all the time, it's a key lesson learned from 2008, that for Haiti we need contributions to be confirmed in the first term each year to be able to avoid this. On the issue of fuel and watershed, I'm sorry, but I'm not so familiar with the issue that you are raising.
There was a statement last year when WFP and in international food meetings came out against the use of renewable resources, biomass, as a threat to food stocks. I know it's a big debate going on in Haiti now that people feel that any kind of use of land for other than food would be squandering the opportunity. And I think that my own sense is that that's not necessarily accurate, given what we know from certain development programs in Africa, that you can have both. And I was wondering if WFP, under all the other crises conditions that you're dealing with, had considered some of these other options. And I'm not talking about using sugar so much, but other types of energy.
Can I just correct the Food and Agriculture Organization, which is our sister organization, is the one that has taken a fairly strong stance on this issue that WFP has not.
Okay.
I mean, that's not our baby in a sense, because it's, you know.
Right, but it impacts you because it impacts on contributions, I think, as well.
Yeah, we really haven't. We haven't made any kind of.
But it chose to completely.
It's not our area of expertise, so we don't.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's the dissociation. It's the disconnect between FAO and some of the feeding programs that create some disinformation, I think. That's my own sense.
I think our time is getting pretty limited. If we could take a couple quick questions, maybe Ambassador, and I know there are a few on this side of the table, maybe five. 5-10 minutes? How do you feel? Okay. Terrific, Ambassador.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. I should say, 20 years ago, we were planting over 10 million trees a year and over 50% survival rate. Those were in the halcyon dictatorship years. But I have two questions. One, something I've been involved in, not so much in Haiti, but a couple other countries in recent years, is a relationship between WFP and the U.S. Food Aid Program, PL-480 and others. What are the relative sizes, but also coordination, where there can be problems or there can be a lot of positive. How do you assess or how might we improve the coordination maybe? The second is that I do have a Haiti connection these days. I'm chairman of board of the Haiti Democracy Project. In fact, we have Jim Morrell is down there now because we're registering some election monitors for this Sunday, Haitian Americans mostly. But we've been concentrating mainly on Haitian Americans the last year or two. We have an advisory board now of about 25 from different parts of the country, the different organizations to be the catalyst. And we have a proposal for a one-week training program in Washington, one-day accounting and budget procedures to set up, which is they usually don't have, but other things. And in that respect, I wondered whether there's something we might want to consider or to try to do to put together our Haitian American advisory group, outreach group with WFP.
Any other question, or do we?
Yeah. Sure.
On the DR versus Haiti issue, DR has several advantages over Haiti that are inherent to it. One is it speaks an international language, which is Spanish, which I cannot underestimate the impact of. I mean, you shouldn't underestimate the impact of that, versus Creole, which is not an international language. Another one is the DR has a lot more flat land than Haiti does. Haiti is 70% mountainous. Here we're talking about extreme, but it's 70% mountainous. It also has quite a bit more rainfall. So it had these sort of natural things, and it had better government also, which we can talk about later too. But specifically on agriculture, with the WFP's local purchase plan, only a small percentage of Haiti farmers grow rice, as you know. In fact, the vast majority of Haiti's farmers don't live in the flatlands where you can grow rice. They live in the mountains, and they grow annual vegetables, and some of them have charcoal gardens. And it's a major problem is that if you do local purchase, you're only ever going to be touching a small portion of those farmers. And plus, those farmers who are in the good, productive flatlands are rapidly losing their farmland into urban, suburban sprawl, especially in the Plan de Cul-de-Sac, which is the watershed around Port-au-Prince, which is 20 years ago was all in sugarcane. Now it's all turning into, it's all fallow, what's flat there, and what's not flat is being turned into new towns and new villages all over the place and forcing yet more folks up into the hills. And so there's this negative reinforcement loop, as there are so many of in Haiti, which you talked about, that continually are putting impact on agriculture there. Also, I'm not really sure that manufacturing of garments is ever going to be competitive with China. That's going to be very hard to do. And in fact, in rice, to buy rice locally, produce rice in Haiti, costs more than to buy imported rice. So it costs more to produce it in Haiti and sell it than it does to import it. And with those kinds of market things going against you, I'm not even sure we should be talking about pushing rice production unless we can increase the yields dramatically to the point where it could become competitive with imported rice. Instead, I look at some of the options for agriculture in Haiti being focusing on some of the export markets, which I normally am against. But in Haiti, there are some natural strengths in that, including mango and aki. They produce more, which is this fruit that they eat in Jamaica for breakfast and eggs and stuff. They produce more aki in Haiti for Jamaica than Jamaica does. In fact, they don't eat it in Haiti. It's all exported. And this is very effective and very efficient and keeps quite a few farmers, small farmers, in business. And if we were to think about perhaps working on those types of options and working on getting those folks who are in the hillsides growing annual crops on 40% slopes, which is completely inherently unsustainable, perhaps growing other crops, and maybe we can start to approach some of the issues. But I'm not at all optimistic after having just done an ag survey down there in September after the hurricanes.
Can you identify yourself?
Yes, I'm Adam Reinhart from USAID.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the questions fit very well together, and I can reply or suggest other point of view at the same time. The U.S. is providing food through WFP and through three main American PBOs in Haiti, World Vision, CRS, and Act Evoca. I have similar programs, so there is a homogeneity in what we do, and we have regular meetings to exchange information and ensure that what we are doing is consistent. And often when one of us has a problem with talks, we lend to each other and then pay back. We try, of course, to not to step on each other's feet and not to distribute twice in the same area. What we maintain is the possibility of intervening in case of a disaster when the capacity of a PVO is stretched. We also intervene and help in the coordination between the PVOs, ourselves, and other actors in food security. Certainly, the possibility to work more with the Haitian diaspora or with Haitians living in the United States is an absolutely welcome opportunity. And one problem in Haiti is also the brain drain that there has been, and blocking that drain and other actually reversing it is fundamental. Talking about our collaboration with PVOs, and maybe I have emphasized too much the focus on rice. When we talk about local procurement, we are not at all meaning procurement of rice only. There are other commodities like beans and maize. And actually, what we have been asked by the local authorities is to support a shift back to consumption patterns that were those of 20 years ago when the population was not consuming so much rice. Rice was the food only for the Sundays, and people were consuming manioc, maize, other commodities during the rest of the week. Now people consume rice two to three times a day. So what we can do is, and actually It is Active Ocao, one of the American PVOs, that is very much looking forward to working with us because they are supporting small farmers in producing pulses, and they are looking forward to our mission to see what possibilities there could be for us to support with local procurement. I fully agree with you that, and this is why I was saying we ambit. I'm feeling under pressure with this idea of the local procurement because people are expecting that we're going to do magics, whereas the capacity of the agricultural sector is limited, and by no means should we support further exploitation of land that is not meant for agricultural purposes. It's meant only for forest. Otherwise, we would never reverse the vicious cycle of environmental degradation and natural disasters. So to us, it is fully clear that the scope for local procurement is limited, but we do believe that we have some scope and that something can be done to support small farmers. What we find really is the issue is to support really the small farmers in Haiti. Mango, export-oriented agricultural products, it's exactly the same as what you said for the export of textiles. There is competition from others, and the fluctuations of international prices are the highest risk. I mean, it's a high-risk exports. So one year it can be good, and the other year it can be less good. What we have done in end of March, early April, we have had a mission together with some experts in food processing to see the existing opportunities to use local products to produce fortified foods for children under two. And what we think could be an opportunity is to look not just, as you said, not only at the, and this is something that the Ministry of Agriculture is rather insisting upon, not to look only on export-oriented industry, but to look also on food processing, for instance, or on something that allows value added to be created within the country and that can cater also to local demand. The purchasing power of local demand is, of course, a challenge. But why not? I mean, as you say, exporting processed foods could be an opportunity. So like we think of exporting mangoes, we can think of exporting mango paste or mango powder or things like that that can be used in baby foods and so on. So these are, of course, very innovative areas, and they are very new for WFP as well. This is why we remain, and they are more for private sector and other types of initiatives. But certainly the baby food area is something that we think is worth looking into it, always with the concern that the road infrastructure is a key challenge. So whatever local market nowadays is extremely limited geographically. So, well, the scale of production is very limited. I mean, there are all sorts of challenges, but we see these as opportunities to look more into. And I don't know if I have responded to everything or...
Do you have maybe time for just one last question, and I think we should wrap it up.
Jerry Hagson from the National Journal. On the question of local procurement, if Haiti already imports a lot of food, don't your purchases just interfere with the food going into the local markets? That's my first question. And secondly, maybe this is a good ending question. Is there any potential for tourism in Haiti? I mean, is there any tourism now, and is there any potential for it, since that seems to be what the rest of the Caribbean is doing?
To respond from that question, the Ile de la Gonâve is as big as Martinique. So, or Île de la Tortue. It's a beautiful country, so and with an incredible culture and sightseeing places and all sorts of places. Somehow, politically, the decision has not been taken. And certainly the security situation has not really favored the prosperous tourism industry. But I know that there is resistance to the tourism industry from within the Haitian political world and the president himself. So maybe this will change over time and with security expanding, but it's also an industry that requires very heavy investment, and maybe this is not the best timing given the international financial crisis for such an industry to prosper. Yet, I mean, the international financial crisis is a reality that even for the textile exports is there. So, unfortunately, it is a problem we all face, and Haiti has to face it as well.
About local procurement.
Well, we avoid procuring imported food. If this is your question, whether we should we I didn't.
No, I'm concerned if overall Haiti has to import a certain amount of food per year, if you procure locally out of the Haitian market instead of bringing in food, aren't you just taking food that would be in the local market and using for WFP programs?
It is part of the economic analysis that we need to make in order to establish where, when, and to what extent we should buy, because I fully agree with you. We are a redistribution mechanism. We would buy from the local market and distribute through the schools, but certainly the risk is that we drain resources, so we cause an excess demand to compare to supply. On the other hand, we are being also criticized because given the quantities that we bring in, we are dumping prices. So we need really to make a fine economic analysis and see to what extent, when and how we can procure locally. We are not personally. I mean, what I see is that we will not be able to buy, and it wouldn't be wise to buy large quantities. But yes, that something can be bought, and that something will be sufficient to create a certain stability in demand for a certain period of time, so that small farmers can better make their decisions and get better support and this will help improving the production structure.
Terrific. Thank you so much for coming and sharing with us.
Thank you.